Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Afriwear to podcast, where we look to celebrate African history by telling our story. As you're aware by now, one of the things that is so important to Afriwear to is the importance of our very dope stories in the fables and folklore realm. And today we have what I think is a truly fun story, which also means that it is also a guest narrator show. And I'm so very pleased to have dialing in all the way from the shores of Kilifi, my wonderful friend who always brings me happiness and calm with his presence, Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, what's up? Thank you so much, Warner, for having me on After Ripple. I must say, I have been dying to be on your podcast.
We're going to come back to that as well, but I had to find the right story for you. But anyway, before we get into that, first of all, a few things to say about our Kevo. He's just an amazing human who inspires more people than he knows with how he lives his life and overcomes those major bumps in the road with grace and kindness. He's a creative, a writer who has been published. I mean, I know very smart people, why lie? And in the same love of writing, he has a very special podcast, Nipe Story, which we shall speak of later, and you'll understand why. I decided I'm just going to adopt him as a BFF. I don't think he really had a choice. I just said he's my BFF. But honestly, who doesn't want to have one like him? He's a real live storyteller, but really for me, as usual, he's here because he's a good friend who supports this crazy dream of African storytelling across the globe, and he's lending his voice, thank you, to Afriwear too, and I'm so grateful. I say it again and again and again, and I will never tire. I have awesome friends. Would you like to say hello to the people, Kevin?
Ante Sana. Thank you. Like I said, it's an honor to be here, and thank you for asking me to do this.
Thank you for saying yes. Now, I want to say a few facts about Ghana, because this is where this fable is rooted. And I hope I haven't shared it before. I hope I haven't shared these facts before. So for one, Accra is the second most expensive city in Africa, apparently. Yeah. Ghana is also home to West Africa's largest open-air single market. It has one of the longest coastlines, spreading from Tema all the way to the west coast of Takoradi. I'm sure I said that wrong. My Ghanaians, please help me by sending in the correct pronunciation. They are also, these Ghanaian people of ours, very welcoming and very warm people. Fufu is apparently Ghana's national dish. It's a starchy side dish. And then I got some intel about another dish called wachie. And it's a favorite Ghanaian dish. And it's wrapped in banana leaves. And what's wrapped in it is rice and beans cooked together overnight, served with an aponche, dry fish, and some shito, which apparently makes a very wonderful Accra breakfast. Who knew? And then lastly, the name Ghana, I'm sure I've said this before, was picked by Kwame Nkrumah to honor the empire of the same name. But the reason I'm saying it again is because guess what, people? That civilization will be coming up this very series. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Kevin.
A long time ago, the days when gods and ancestors roamed the earth, there was the first spider, Kweku Anansi. He went everywhere throughout the world, traveling on his strong web strings, sometimes looking more like a wise man than a spider. In that long time ago, there were no stories on earth for anyone to tell. All the stories belonged to Nyame, the supreme force of the skies, the sky god. Nyame kept all stories to himself, up high in the sky, and locked away in a wooden box underneath his throne. Many had tried, and all had failed to get these stories. And so the people on earth, with no stories to share, or entertain, or learn from, didn't have much to do. They grew bored and restless. This was the same for Anansi. And he, more than anything, wanted the story so he should be entertained, but also so that he could know the beginning and ending of things. So, he decided to try himself, and he started the journey. So he wore the best web ever, one that reached all the way to the skies, and climbed up until he reached Nyame's throne. Nyame, supreme being and keeper of all stories, I have come to ask that you share these stories. Let me take them down to earth. Please, please, can you give me the box underneath your throne where they are kept? Nyame, on hearing Anansi's request, laughed and mocked him. Do you think other great kingdoms have not come to try and get these stories? Rulers from Bekwai, Kokofu, and Asungmenya, and more like them, but they did not get them. Yet you think that you of all the great creatures can succeed where they didn't? Surely you have no sense. Be gone. Be gone from here and stop wasting my time from this foolishness, Anansi. Anansi was not deterred. Tell me the price that they could not pay, and I will pay it. I will give you the stories, said Nyame. But my stories have a great price. Four fearsome and elusive creatures. The first is Onini, the great python who can swallow a man whole. The second is Oshebo, the mighty leopard whose teeth are as sharp as spears. The third is Moboro, the giant hornet whose sting burns like a needle of fire. And lastly, Moashia, the fairy who is never seen. Not only will I pay the price, I will add a bonus and bring my own mother, Yansia, said Anansi with quiet confidence. And off he went back home. Climbing down from the clouds, on getting home, called his wife, Asho, and his mother, Yansia, to tell them of his visit and his plan. Asho came up with a plan for the first creature, Onini, the python who eats men whole. She told him a plan, saying, "Go and cut a branch of the palm tree in the forest and then come back." Anansi did as he was told and came back with them. Asho then filled him in on the rest of the plan. Anansi agreed with it and headed to the river where Onini lived and put it in motion. He started walking up and down, muttering occasionally, shouting as he argued aloud to himself, "This is shorter than he. You lie, no. No, it's true. The branch is shorter. He's longer. No. It must be much, much longer." The python was listening and asked what Spider was talking about. "What is going on, Anansi? Why are you muttering and shouting?" "I've been quarreling with my wife," said Anansi. "She says that you are shorter than this branch, but I told her you are longer. She will not listen to me, and I do not see how I can prove to her that I am right." "Onini," the python said, This is very easy to solve. Place the branch on the ground here, next to me, and we will prove that she is wrong. The great snake slithered over and lay next to Anansi's branch. It looks like you may be longer, said Anansi. But I can tell for sure you're not quite straightened out. Well, could I straighten you out? Could I straighten you out a bit? Certainly, said Onini. Let me fasten your tail at this end, said Anansi as he worked. That way, I can really strengthen you out. And let me fasten you here, by your head as well. Before the python realized what Anansi was up to, Anansi had spun a web round Onini and tied him to the branch. Now you are caught, said Anansi. Then the Spider-Man said to Onini, you fell for my trap. I will now take you to the sky god, Nyame. This Anansi did as he spun a web around the snake to carry him back through the clouds to the kingdom and mocking the python along the way and informing him of his bargain with Nyame. On seeing the giant snake, Nyame merely said, there remains what still remains. Anansi went back down to earth and also told Asho of his success. Well done. Now I've been thinking. Here is the plan for our next creature. Go and dig a big hole, Asho said. Anansi immediately caught on to the plan. Oshibo, the leopard with teeth like spears. That night, Anansi went and dug a big hole, a pit in the forest, the route Oshibo normally used when he was heading home from being out all night. He then covered it with branches of the trees and returned home. The following morning, he went back and as planned, he found Oshibo lying at the bottom of the pit. Oshibo, said Anansi, feigning innocence and sympathy. What are you doing in that pit? Is this how you act? You should not be prowling around at night after a night of drinking. Haven't I told you this before? See you now at the bottom of the hole. You fool, said Oshibo. Can't you see that I've fallen into a trap? You must get me out. So you can come and eat me, eh? Hey, I'm sorry. I cannot risk it. Find another way. Anansi continued lamenting that he wanted to help Oshibo, but was certain that Oshibo would turn on him. Oshibo insisted that he would not harm Anansi. And finally, the spider agreed to help him. Fine. Let me see what I can do, said Anansi. The spider's plan was working. Anansi went aside and cut two long sticks with his knife and placed them over the pit. Now, put your paws here and here, and I will help you out. Oshibo put his paws on the stick, not realizing that he had let himself vulnerable, as was the plan, and started trying to climb out. Quickly, Anansi tossed his knife and hit Oshibo over the head with it, causing the leopard to fall back into the pit, knocked out and unconscious. Anansi then got out his makeshift ladder, climbed into the pit to collect Oshibo, spinning an impenetrable web to hold and carry the leopard through the cloud up to Nyame. On his way up, he gloated over the trap and how easy it was to catch Oshibo, telling him of his plan to get the stories of the world from the sky god Nyame. On seeing the leopard, Nyame merely said, there remains what still remains. Anansi once again went home and told of his success to Asho. Now we capture Moboro. Go and find an empty gourd, fill it with water, and then we move. Moboro, the giant hornet with a deadly sting. Anansi headed to the bush and found the location of Moboro's nest. He kept himself out of sight, poured some of the water on himself, got a banana leaf as a fake cover, and then went closer and poured water over Moboro's nest, and then poured the rest of the water on himself, so he was drenched. As expected, Moboro came out, rushing out, buzzing furiously. "The rainy season has come early. I've been caught here with just my banana leaf for cover. It is very heavy. It will damage your wings. Come, come. Let me give you shelter. Quickly, fly into my gourd. It will keep you dry." "Thank you, Anansi," Moboro replied as he flew into the gourd, into the well-set trap. Anansi sealed the gourd with a thick web. Moboro was caught. "I've caught another of you creatures. I'm taking you straight to Nyame, up in the sky, as a prize for his stories." And once again, Anansi climbed up through the clouds and deposited his catch. On seeing the giant hornet, Nyame, once again, merely said, "There remains what still remains." Anansi took his leave and went back to Asho to plan on how to get the last of the creatures, Mwashia. Asho directed him to carve out an aqua's door, and then they proceeded to plan the final scheme. Mwashia, the invisible fairy. The next morning, Anansi took the aqua doll and went to the Odam tree, where he knew the fairy liked to play. The doll had been made to specifications set by his wife. It was covered with the sap from a gum tree, making it very sticky. Anansi had also made pounded yam, eto, and covered the aqua doll's hands in it, and also added yams, filling a brass basin that he set by her feet as he placed her on the tree. And to keep her steady, he tied her to the tree. Anansi, his work done, then took a long vine and tied it to the aqua's neck and waist so as to be able to control its movement like a puppet. He didn't have to wait long. Soon, Mwashia came to the tree, having seen the aqua. She then spotted the eto in the basin and asked the aqua if she could have some. Anansi pulled the aqua string, causing it to nod its head. Mwashia was pleased and she called her fairy sisters to eat with her. They feasted and were satisfied. On finishing, Mwashia turned to thank the aqua, but this time Anansi did nothing, so the aqua did not move. Mwashia felt disrespected. Not even an acknowledgement of her thanks. She ran and told her sisters this. They came back. "I thanked her, and she ignored me." "Slap her! Slap her!" said one of the sisters. "Teach her manners." So Mwashia slapped Aqua. Pa! But then her hand stuck on her cheek. "Slap her again, oh, so she can let go of your other hand," said another sister. Mwashia gave her a solid slap with the right hand. Pa! But then, now her right hand got stuck. In her frustration, she kicked the aqua with her right leg. Doo! And of course, got stuck. Then she yelled and kicked the aqua with her left leg. Doo! And now, she was completely stuck to the aqua. She then tried to push the aqua with her stomach. Boom! And became totally immovable. It is then that Anansi jumped out from behind the tree, from his hiding place and spun a web around her, tying her firmly to the aqua. "You have been caught! And now you shall be presented to Nyame, so I can receive my prize of all the stories in the world." Anansi made his way home, for he had one more step. He had promised his mother, Yansia, as part of the bargain. On getting home with his prize final creature, he reminded his mother of his promise, and she agreed to go with him. Off they went, climbing up, up, up into the sky, through the clouds this one last time. Anansi, on arrival to the throne room, presented his final successful catch. Nyame, on seeing this, paused. He was thoroughly impressed and called on his nobles for a meeting. He summoned them from far and wide to see this feat from what he had thought was an insignificant Anansi. He, in a booming and thunderous voice, declared, "Listen to me. Anansi has paid the price for the stories of the sky god. I do hereby give the stories to him. Kweku Anansi and Asho have achieved what no one has before, even the greatest of kingdoms. From now on and forever, my sky god stories belong to you. Kose, Kose, Kose. My blessing, my blessing, my blessing. Whenever someone tells one of these stories, he or she must acknowledge these as the spider stories. These stories will always be known as Anansi's fables." Anansi brought the wooden box of stories to his home. He and Asho learned each one of them. And to this day, everywhere you look, they spin their web of tales and stories for all to see.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I found this story really a lot of fun, but it's not about me. It's about you and the Afriwatu. What was your best bit about this story?
For me, the best bit was learning why these stories are called spider tales. I'm like, wow, that is fantastic. You know, so you added to my body of knowledge. That to me just blew me away.
And you know what the funniest thing is? Because when I was looking at the Anansi stories, and I was thinking of what is going to really capture, and the reason why, and this comes to the reason why I picked this particular story, but the reason why it comes to embody what it is I know you for, which is why we nicely segue into Nipe's story. Do you want to tell the people a little bit more about, and by the way, guys, if you have not heard Nipe's story, we will have words later. But do you want to tell the people a little bit about Nipe's story? Your wonderful podcast.
Thank you, Asante Sana. Nipe's story is a storytelling podcast that brings short written fiction to life, you know? So we voice short story fiction from Africa. It was started in December 2017, and it's been running ever since. And it's interesting that we just having done this fable and then talking about the short stories on Nipe's story, it feels like Nipe's story is modern fables. So maybe in a few years' time, people will say, "Hey, I remember this story, or Nipe's story, where, you know, in 2022, 2023, you know?"
This is true.
Nipe's story might be looked like as a place for fables, African fables.
And you know what? To be honest, the reason I picked Anansi's stories, the spider stories, is because you are a storyteller of many stories from across the continent. And this just felt like the whole, and actually this particular fable especially is about this, the god who held all the stories, and then Anansi was able to hit all the tasks, and then, you know, get all the magical, mythical beings up there to then be able to share stories of the world. And I was like, this is Kevin. This is him. This is Kevo. So that's why it had to be the right story for you. Like, it just felt, I read it and I was like, yeah, this one is for Kevin. Nobody else is going to do this.
I must say, Mona, it was fun. And to the Ghanaian listeners, my apologies for mispronunciations that you may hear, you will hear. But you know, when you said it to me, I'm like, you know, I've been to Ghana a few times, and like, this in West Africa, Ghana is home, you know, at the beginning
really?
Of the podcast, when you were talking about Ghana, I'm like, hey, you were stirring up something inside of me. I was homesick for Ghana.
Really?
Kabisa, I won't cheat you. This.
Wow.
Ghana feels like the Kenyan version of West Africa, but more colorful and with better food.
Ouch. But true.
There's no for cheating.
It's like, it's fine.
When you're talking about plantain and fufu, and wache, I'm like, I want to add jollof rice to that.
Yeah, you know, I was steering clear of jollof because I'm just like, hey, that's a whole other political. But you're right, because I hear the jollof. I've never tasted jollof rice. I'm so sorry, my Ghanaian people. I've never tasted Ghanaian jollof. I've tasted Nigerian. I really want to taste Senegalese because, Kevin, apparently they have the best one. But, and Cameroonian I've tasted. But I really do want to taste the Ghanaian one. Is it as good as they say it is? For real.
I remember there's one time I went to Ghana and I told guys, I'm going to eat three things for the rest of the 4 trips and nothing else. It was jollof rice, plantain, which we call kelewele.
Yes.
Something called red, which is a mixture of rice, I think beans and sardines.
What?
Some red sauce. And that thing was fantastic.
Okay,
you know, it was a while back, but I'm like, that is all I was going to eat, and that is all I ate, and then that is all I ate.
Wow.
So, it was fantastic.
Red.
Everything you said about Ghana, red, yeah.
Okay.
Everything you said about Ghana is true. You know, I love the fact plantain is served with everything.
Yes.
Friendly. Accra, there is crazy traffic, but it was just a fantastic place to be in, a fantastic country to be in. And thank you for making me, you know, be part of AfriWetu through a story like this. You know, it took me back. It made me like,
really?
Yeah, I hope I do Ghana proud.
You know what? Why I'm just gobsmacked right now is because I didn't even know about your connection to Ghana. Like that's just blows my mind. But you see, that's why the story is for you. It's, wow. I'm so glad. Oh my gosh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to have a moment. Go on, you must say.
And I must say, I think for me is I love traveling across the continent. And
yes.
Everywhere too is now going to become a bit of a reference.
Just be like, oh.
Because when you did the episode on Eswatini.
Yes.
Eswatini.
Yes.
So stuff I knew, and then like you added to it, and then when I was there, I went to the museums, you know, just to
yes.
And like, hey, Mona said this. And then when they're telling you about the country, the kingdom's history, you're like, I know. And so good on you. Big up on you on telling the stories of Africa's kingdoms and Africa's people.
Oh, thank you. And in fact, I should tell the AfriWatu about how you brought me a beautiful gift from Eswatini, which it's so beautiful. I'm just like, I can't actually use it. I'm going to have to like frame it or something. It was just so, 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 so beautiful. I still have it here, just looking at me. From the kingdom.
They call it Emahia.
Thank you. I mean, also, I just have smart friends. I just love it. But actually, the other thing as well about this particular people and what it is that you do at Nipe Story and who you are about, especially traveling around, is that this Anansi is it's global in that the stories were taken by those who are enslaved, Africans who are enslaved across the Atlantic. So it's something that if you go to, for example, across the Atlantic, especially to Southern America, South America, they actually have the story of Anansi. And they actually trace it back to Ghana. So it was just, wow. In fact, I think there's even a TV series around it, but it resonates across into the Caribbean. You know what I mean? Into South America, into the Americas. Like it actually has carried over. Which I just thought was amazing. Right?
Absolutely.
And you know, they actually study it. Like when I was reading more about it, they actually study these stories as literature. And wow. Yeah, and then go, yeah, then they go into, like, you know, it was spoken in the Twi language, then they go into, so like unpacking who he was and how he is. It's so deep. So I would, and that's why I was like, this is something which, it was a fun story, so I knew you'd appreciate a fun story, but also just the many different levels, which is how you operate as well. I just thought this is just something that, it just hit me. I was like, wow. It's taken this long because it had to be this kind of story where it doesn't just stop as a fable. It has so many other layers that people can go into. But yeah.
And then also the beautiful thing about the fables from the continent is when I was going through the script, the first time was the spider and how in even other cultures, the spider is seen as wise and crafty.
Yep.
As well.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, this is really, yeah. I'm like, even for these guys, I'm like, okay, this is really.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? So I just thought that was really new. And then I think touching on Nipe's story and this fable and what I do as a person with my work, I've always told people, even as a journalist, I'm a custodian of people's stories.
Oh, I like that.
People give me their stories to broadcast, and that's what I did through my years at BBC. So there was some similarity with Anansi. He was given the stories by Nami, and he was the custodian.
Yes.
So even with Nipe's story, I'm a custodian of stories from fictional writers from the continent. They have entrusted me, and I hope the work that we do as storytellers,
yes,
you know,
yes,
custodians of Africa's stories, who I think is appreciated, but also just shows the richness of the stories and history and the richness of culture that is coming out of this continent, but is within this continent. And thanks to the podcasting and other forms of media, we are able to do this, be it writing, be it visual stuff, be it cinematic, you know, or dance, you know. I think we should never forget that we are custodians of storytelling.
I actually like that.
We are custodians of stories.
I like that because, and the thing is like, and it's so wonderful speaking to a fellow storyteller because what you do in terms of Nipe's story and what you did as a journalist and what you do anyway as well in terms of just making sure that stories are told also from those who are hidden. And I think that's the thing. So for me, I think when I think of Afriwetu, I think of these are almost like they're hidden histories and hidden stories. And because they're hidden histories and hidden stories, the sad thing is if we allow them to remain so. And going back to your point about, especially when you think of popular culture, and I always see that story making and storytelling is the most powerful thing. It really, really is. Right? Like everything boils down to what is the story? Like people ask, what is your story? What is their story? What is this? Everything that we do is based on the story. So whatever that story is, and if you're telling the right ones, then you have such wonderful results. If you're telling the wrong ones, we've seen what decades of telling the wrong stories about our beautiful continent has done. Mm. Not just mm-hmm. outside, but for me, it's to the psyche of our own people. That's the Absolutely. Thing. That's actually the more painful thing, is our own psyche.
Absolutely. And I agree with you 100%. Even as you were speaking there, it just hit me that we are curating stories for the next generation by having yes. them on a digital space.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's yeah. from being oral to written yeah. to, you know, to whatever form. And now we are taking it to the next level, such that future generations will say, oh, there are repositories of stories here. And
yes.
I think for me, that just validates rather the work that we are doing as storytellers from yep. the continent.
Yep. Yep. So, on that, because you know you and I can talk forever, but I wanted to know if
forever,
if there's anything you wanted to, first of all, actually, how can the people follow you, Kevin, or follow Nipe Story, or follow anything that you would want them to?
I just tell people, follow Nipe Story on Twitter. Uh-huh. It's like you, fellow podcaster to podcaster, there are capacity issues. There's some things I love to do with yep. Nipe on the socials, but just follow Nipe Story on wherever you get your podcast from. There's Twitter as well. Personally, I'm also on both platforms, Twitter and Instagram, if you want to follow my work or my activism or my storytelling. And that's it. And spread the word about podcasts from Africa.
Yes.
And the content that is coming out from Africa. There's a lot of good stuff out
there. So much. So much. More than we can contain. And actually, just for those, Nipe is Nipe Story. So, Nipe yeah, Story.
I keep on forgetting. Nice story. I'm like, what are you saying?
And can you tell the people what Nipe Story is? Just it's a Swahili for?
Tell me a story.
There we go.
Give me a story. Tell me a story. It's loosely translated. Tell me a story or give me a story.
Oh, give me a story. And then the other thing I was going to say is like, thank you so much. Thank you so much for doing this. And you know that you're welcome back. Now I'm going to have to up it in the next story that I give you.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, I just
want to
hear a story from Malawi as well.
Okay, you see, I love the way you just like slid that in. You're like, I want to hear a story from Malawi. All right, then.
From the kingdoms, the small kingdoms in Malawi.
So
I want to hear that.
So actually, in this series, I've done the Maravi and the Undi kingdoms. The Maravi Empire and the Undi kingdom, which yes. actually span from Malawi, Mozambique, and Zambia. So it's mostly around the Chewa people. So guys, also check that out. But I will look for a fable, legend, guests, narrator show just for you. I'll find one.
Thank you so much.
I will find one.
and kudos to you. Just to let you know, Malawi is actually the original. You know, in Malawi, the R's and the L's are used very much
like some of our people, the Kikuyus.
Yes, you said this.
You know. I know. Yes, I can. These are also my answers.
Maravi is the original, and that I'm sure you're aware of.
Yes. Yeah, and but actually, you know, the funny, so, you know, here, you see, this is what happens. But let me say this very quickly. This, I had never heard of the Maravi until I started doing the research, and I actually found out about it by accident, which is one of the beautiful things about doing AfriWeto, is like, as I'm studying one civilization, others crop up and I'm like, ooh, never heard of that. Went into that and just went into a whole other world. I was like, how did I not know this? And that's why I love, can you imagine, never heard of it. And it was huge and such an impact, but never heard of it. Imagine. But yeah, so I was very excited when I was doing that. I was learning with the AfriWeto, honestly.
Yeah, it's for me, it's just amazing. This is stuff, what you're doing, it's stuff that I've not yet seen. I don't think it's a hit to do, you know. I'm not saying it's his fault, but It's just that the marketing was a was a writer that was part of Kenya's education, part and parcel of Kenya's education. But I mean, for AfriWetu and we the AfriWatu really appreciate the work that you were doing.
Asante. Asante. Shukrani, shukrani, shukrani. Asante sana. And with that, good people, until next time, Mubarikiwe.